Hello, everyone. Welcome to this live cast. I am Chris Martinson, and Evie will be with us shortly. She just had a couple things to attend to, so she'll be sliding on in here in just a minute. So, hey, welcome to this live cast. It's Sunday. What is it? June 10th, I guess, or something kind of like that. And today we're going to be talking about... it's June 11th. Right, thanks. So today we're going to be talking about the Trump indictment, but first I have to talk to you about leftist authoritarians, manifestos, things like that, because I think we're at a really critical part of our adventure together as humans, particularly in the United States, but a lot of Western countries. Our choices now include confronting something that's happening straight up, or think being really disappointed with how things turn out for the next several sets of decades. This is it. It's really kind of for all the marbles. And I know they say that about all sorts of times in history. It's a common refrain. This time it's so important because I'm alive. But in fact, this is a really important time. There is some big stuff going down. Hey, Evie.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Good to
you
be here.
Right in. Nope, you just slid right in. It's
I
perfect.
I just slipped right in.
All right.
Don't mind me.
So today we are going to be going through those things. And where should we start with this? Oh, I think I prepared some slides.
Oh, you didn't. You didn't.
I might have. And by the way, if I look like I'm, there's a sheen of sweat going on, it's because there is, and it's not.
It's warm here.
It is warm here, but not that warm. I was just outside working on the farm, and it's pretty hot today. So I literally worked till 10 minutes before this, slid right in, and here I am.
Yeah, we're a little burly over here.
So you got a
Same.
Nice sheen going too.
I got that too.
All right, so hey, we'll all have a sheen together. So good to have you here today. Can't wait to continue talking with you about what's going on in the world. Hearing your comments down below over here in the chat, if you want to engage in the chat, we are monitoring it. Maybe not totally comprehensively because it's hard to look at two things at once, but we will monitor as best we can. And if we can respond to your chats, go for it. Ask questions, feel free. Otherwise, leave comments down below. We read them all. We've got some of your reader comments here today from last time that we want to go over because you asked some good questions, made some good observations. So we'll go through all of that. And Evie, do you have anything for today? Oh, you're knitting.
Oh, I'm knitting. I'm actually working on something important, too. It's not just a dish towel.
This time? Not
yeah,
really just
I'm making
a
baby blanket.
Baby blanket.
No, don't get the wrong idea. It's not for us. It's for a friend.
Thanks for clarifying.
The look on your face.
I just don't want... Okay, it's important to keep everybody in the loop.
It is.
Totally down
just,
with that. All right.
Just to be clear.
So, I want to talk about of manifestos, leftists, and also the Trump indictment. And by the way, these are all connected events now. So I want to start with something, and I'm going to read this out. And your challenge out there in whoever's watching it this time is to figure out who wrote this thing. First up, maybe even before that, do you agree with it? And second of all, who do you think wrote this particular thing I'm about to read out here? So let's go there real quick. I'll give you a hint. This was written in 1995, and it reads, quote, "Some leftists may seem to oppose technology, but they will oppose it only so long as they are outsiders, and the technological system is controlled by non-leftists. If leftism ever becomes dominant in society so that the technological system becomes a tool in the hands of leftists, they will enthusiastically use it and promote its growth. In doing this, they will be repeating a pattern that leftism has shown again and again in the past. When the Bolsheviks in Russia were outsiders, they vigorously opposed censorship and the secret police. They advocated self-determination for ethnic minorities and so forth. But as soon as they came into power themselves, they imposed a tighter censorship and created a more ruthless secret police than any that had existed under the czars. And they oppressed ethnic minorities at least as much as the czars had done. In the United States, a couple of decades ago, when leftists were a minority in our universities, leftist professors were vigorous proponents of academic freedom. But today, in those of our universities where leftists have become dominant, they have shown themselves ready to take away from everyone else's academic freedom. This is political correctness. The same will happen with leftists and technology. They will use it to oppress everyone else if they ever get it under their own control." End quote. this is written in 1995. So consider this. Wow. So 1995, there really isn't like an internet, you know, at that point in time. The idea the technology could become that dominant, that maps perfectly into my whole experience in being censored. All the censorship we saw with all the doctors and other people around COVID, this maps in perfectly. How did this person see this clearly in 1995?
That's a good question. You used to have to go to the library.
Yeah.
If you wanted to study subjects, you couldn't just type in a hashtag and find out what people had to say. It was so much, I mean, everybody here knows it was a way different story back then.
Yeah. So this piece, right? Like really, this speaks to me because it's exactly the pattern. So in 1995, I was getting my PhD then, just wrapping up my program.
Yep.
And political correctness was really driving me nuts even then. I remember I took I was in an evolutionary biology class, and somehow the topic came up of men and women gender stuff. And there was this strong strain within the classroom that, you know, that there was no difference, that there was pure equality. And I had a daughter at that point in time. Like, they kids come out, boys and girls just come out different, right? You know? They just come out, not entirely, you know, there's some overlap on the big, you know, Venn diagrams and all this and that, but they come out how they come out, and there are distinct differences that are completely, objectively, obviously different.
Yeah, they are. I have a friend who had like four daughters and then a son and was like shocked when that actually happened, because he said that like his daughters, the sounds they made, the grunts they made, the way they communicated, it's completely different. And already, this was a farmer friend of mine, his son was just like interested in crashing trucks together. Mm-hmm. And like the girls are just doing different things. It's it's not a judgment on the sexes at all. It's just the way we're made.
Well, but who wrote this, you know?
You going to make this? Me guess?
Yeah, I already told you.
Darn it, because I had the answer.
Somebody wrote Ron Paul. Good. Okay, interesting guess.
That is a good guess.
Okay. It could.
I guess Brett Weinstein.
Shoot GP got it right, and so did I think Goofy Noofy. Yes, Ted Kaczynski. This is a Ted Kaczynski piece from his manifesto, The Unabomber. He just died in prison the other day, whether by natural causes or suicide, I'm still unclear, but he's dead.
We get to say Ted Kaczynski didn't kill himself. Sorry.
I get to say he's not wrong, you know? Look at this thing. Because this is exactly what this exactly happened. And if I had read this in 1995, I would have said, nah, I would have poo-pooed this. And he was exactly right. This is exactly what happened. So the question becomes, what is it about, he's calling him leftist here, but let's define this a little bit.
All right.
I haven't seen all of Plandemic 3 yet, but there's a clip in it, right? This is Mickey Willis's new film, The Great Awakening.
Yep.
And in there, there's G. Edward Griffin as a young man. And I know G. Edward personally, right? The author of Creature from Jekyll Island. Smart, smart, smart man. Oh, smart. Humble.
He's
wonderful.
He's old, but he's still really sharp.
Oh my gosh. And his wife, Pat. So.
Yeah, we met them.
Yeah. So.
Great people.
Hey, G. Edward. Hey, Pat. Ed. So listen, fabulous work that you've done. Absolutely spectacularly good work. So thanks. Now, he talked about the collectivists. Really, really brilliantly. So in this, there's this clip floating around on Twitter that I saw, which is just about a 3 minute clip of G. Edward. I've only known him he was in his 80s when I first met him. He's probably in his 40s in this. So, you know.
Like that black and white clip of him?
Yeah, this is, it's chatting. Like, or it's like colorized so badly, like they were still using 3-layer film, whatever was going on, you know, or whatever. But anyways, this is like 40, 50 years ago, and he outlined this whole thing perfectly, right? And his point was that the way he explained it to me a long time ago was that some people think it's a continuum left versus right, you know, and all the way far, far right, you have Nazis, and all the way far, far left, you know, you have Stalinistic, you know, communistic Mao people. But his point was actually, it's not a straight line. It's a ring, and it wraps around, and there's no difference. There's no distinguishable difference between the ultra far left, the ultra far right, because they fundamentally share the authoritarian gene. Mm. So when I'm reading Ted's stuff here and he's talking about leftists, I'm going to mentally insert authoritarian. All right. These are people who have a collectivist thinking. That's how G. Edward would have described it. It's a, a collectivist point of view.
Right.
Which says that you have to subsume yourself into this larger ideology, you mm-hmm. know, and that the ideology is more important than any one individual. So it's either individualism is on one end of a spectrum, collectivism is on the other, and that doesn't wrap around and become a ring.
Right.
those are legitimate, actual,
like,
different things, like in opposition to each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm following you.
Yeah. So that's what I'm talking about when we read something like this, is about what are the leftists up to, or what are the authoritarians up to, and whether you call them communists, Stalinists, Marxists, Nazis, Stanford mm-hmm. University professors. It's
right.
It's all one thing. But isn't that amazing? That's the Unabomber who I was led to believe, because I, you know, at the time they're like this crazy guy living in a cabin in Montana mm-hmm. and he's just blowing people up for no reason. But his manifesto, and by the way, I just downloaded it first time, taking a tour through it, and darned if I'm not going,
So, I know you're down at your desk today going, oh my God.
So, again, we can separate, you know, the person from the actions, that, like his thoughts here, though. His thoughts are correct. And a lot of people don't know this, but there was a program called MKUltra. And that was a mind control experiment thing where they took typically very, very bright, typically male subjects from top universities. And they subjected them to a variety of really unpleasant, over in retrospect, horrifying experiments to see what they could do to shape their minds, you know, and get them to go certain directions.
Such as?
They had really powerful, potent psychological experiments they would run on them, stressing them, shaming them, putting them into really dark situations and, you know, basements, lots and lots of LSD and overdose territory kind of stuff.
Oh, creating like an ordeal.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
I don't know the details of what they did. That's why I asked.
Okay. Well, I only bring it up because Ted Kaczynski is a famous graduate of the MKUltra program. He went through that program.
Hmm.
And that somehow never came out when I was reading about this crazy guy in a cabin with bombs, right? And it turned out there was a reason maybe that he was a little unbalanced. There was never any sort of like the government going, you know, maybe we had a hand in that. Maybe should we not have done that? Should we not have taken very bright young men and mentally deranged them and fed them lots of LSD? Should we not have done that?
Wow, that's a next level brainwash. LSD. Holy moly.
Yeah, but this is really underselling the actual depth of the experiments they were running, because they already had at this point very deep understanding of how we're wired, how mm-hmm. you could destabilize that wiring, what brainwashing really looks like. But we're going to talk about this because this is the setup for the large amount of brainwashing that we're undergoing. And I believe we are now today, in the case I want to make here today, with your assistance, with Evie's input here, is that we're in the midst of a mass psychosis event. Another one,
mm-hmm.
a big one. So, at any rate. So, let's see. So, you know where I want to start with this, Evie?
Where?
This. Ooh. I'm old enough to remember this. So this actually happened. I was in my 20s at the time when this happened. And this was what is now, we look back and go, ha, 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 ha. It's the Satanic Panic. So this is about a case, reading here from this real crime website. Quote, in the 1980s, allegations of ritualized child sexual abuse were made against multiple preschool and daycare workers across the United States. In the Michigan preschool case of 1983 to 1990, hundreds of children at the school located in Manhattan Beach, California, close to LA, described being abused at times during satanic rites in response to suggestive questions by the social workers.
Mm-hmm.
Seven teachers were indicted amid a firestorm of parental panic, media interest. Only two went to trial and no one was convicted.
Whoa.
We'll go into this case a little bit more, but this is important. This swept the nation. This wasn't there was this one case, which we'll talk about, the McMartin preschool case.
Yeah.
But this happened all of a sudden. Wouldn't you know it? There was satanic stuff happening in preschools everywhere, right? And this is a sort of a hysteria that sweeps, right?
Yeah.
The gender dysphoria we have today is exactly that. We look back on this whenever we do with embarrassment and shame and go, well, okay, let's pretend that didn't happen, because it was really embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, isn't this the same case where...
Can you pull your...
Sorry. Isn't this the same situation where there were individuals that went into psychotherapy and memories were implanted? Or is that something different?
It's it's related, as you'll see in the next slide here, that here's what happened. Here's what happened. So in August of 1983, quote, Judy Johnson, this parent, told police in Manhattan Beach, California, that doctors believed her 2-year-old son had been sodomized. According to Johnson, her son had said Mr. Ray was responsible. Ray Buckey was part of the staff at the Virginia McMartin Preschool, which Johnson's son attended. Buckey was arrested on September 7th, 1983. Following day, Manhattan Beach police, get this, sent 200 letters to families of McMartin students. So the police did this. They sent letters that said, the letter mentioned child molestation and directed parents to please question your child to see if he or she has been a witness to any crime or if he or she has been a victim. And guess what? Ray Buckey was named in the letter.
Oh, that's awful.
That's called tainted from the start. Like,
yeah.
Like that is just, this is like, there's bad policing and then there's this.
Yep. That is not a good investigation at all. Wow.
Susan Moran, a criminal defense attorney and professor at Case Western, said, when you send a letter out like that, naming the alleged individual, you've already tainted that investigation. And by the way, these parents are ill-equipped with proper questioning methods, and now you're going to have all these problems that happen. Okay? So then what happened? So after this letter is sent out, hundreds of former, and this gets to what you were asking about the implanted memories, hundreds of former or current McMartin students went to Children's Institute International of Los Angeles, Children's Therapy Center. Social worker Key McFarlane did most of the interviews with these children, and it was later determined that during these CII interviews, which were videotaped, children were asked leading questions such as, can you remember the naked pictures? They were told that other kids had already shared yucky secrets, so they needed to speak up. A child who denied abuse was called a scaredy cat.
Wow.
I mean, there's bad and you know, there's, but this is like, that's off the charts. Like even then we could say, oh, well, we know more about how not to be that way, but we already knew how not to do that.
I think, remember that woman, that new age, like spiritualist lady, Teal Swan, I think her name is. I think she got caught up in this from what I recall. I'll have to look into that.
There was, if I remember, she describes in her background, she had satanic abuse of some kind, but that's all I know about it.
Yeah.
You know.
At any rate.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. That's just disturbing. If my kid came home from school, or if I got a letter like that, I would freak out.
But you can't.
But, I mean, how can you not?
I mean, to your point, though, about you can implant memory. So it turns out that you can experience real abuse, right? But somebody convincing you you've been abused can have a similar echo in your life that you still have to recover from.
Yeah.
Because it's a mind F. It's a MK Ultra mind F. Hey, here's some stuff that happened to you, you know?
Right.
We're going to make it seem real, and it's real.
How do you feel about that? Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you're two and a 3-year-old, though, you have no defenses against something like this, right?
No.
Right? Okay. So
sure, that's a bad thing for kids to experience.
As you know, I'm going somewhere with something.
Okay, you go.
Sure. So, okay, here, completely suspicious accounts, though. So get this, right? At some point, there should have been alarm bells going off in the investigators, the prosecutors, like all the hundreds of adults, like swarming on this case. There should have been a few questions. Here's where a couple might have popped up. Children ended up talking about playing games like Naked Movie Star or being in tunnels under the school. They also stated they'd visited local businesses and been assaulted there. In some accounts, they said their teachers had killed rabbits and turtles to intimidate them. Testimony from the young students also ended up linking the case to growing nationwide fears about Satanism. And they think they started blaming certain music records and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Remember there was that whole, like, I don't remember who it was. Who was it? It was Tip O'Neill? No, it was Tipper. What was her name? Anyway, there was this, the wife of
I'm sorry, it's, I cannot be with
Al Gore's wife. It was Al Gore's wife who went on this whole thing about we have to get Satanism out of music, and then next thing you know, video games are responsible for things. Da-da-da-da-da.
Whoa.
Does anybody remember that? Anybody else remember that out there? Tipper Gore? I think that's right. Anyway.
We'll find out.
Yeah, Joe Potter says Frank Zappa knows. Yeah. Ooh, Chickens and Kittens says, I was a McMartin preschool student in the late 70s, early 80s. So, okay. Any tunnels that you remember? Just kidding. A child, quote here, continuing. A child talked of a baby being sacrificed in a church. Another student said he'd been taken to a graveyard where he helped unearth a coffin and saw a body that was then cut with knives. Interviews also mentioned the preschool teachers flying in the air while dressed as witches. So I'm just saying, at some point,
wow,
somebody goes, you know, this seems a little fantastical.
A little like the Wizard of Oz mixed with some kind of other horror.
Well, this, I think, is, my point would be, this is what happens when you suggestively implant stuff to kids, encouraging them to not be a scaredy cat, and they come up with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you go, wow, maybe they're just making this stuff up to please the interviewer or to not be a scaredy cat or to otherwise please the people who are saying, we need mm-hmm. you to say this thing for us.
Or to talk to their friends, right? Like to support their cohorts in that class or whatever.
Yeah. Well, whatever the framing is at that age, you know, it's...
You care about your peers and...
Yeah.
You talk.
Okay. So this is where it gets really awkward. And this is where we can build the case, I think, that there's elements we can look at here to understand when we're in the midst of a psychosis. And one of them is when completely bogus stuff starts to happen. Right. Mm-hmm. People, the so-called adults in the room are just making crap up to fit the narrative. Okay. So the trial of Bucky, Ray Bucky, and McMartin Bucky began April 1987. Okay. Notice that date. On January of 1990, they were found not guilty on 52 counts and not guilty. And then everybody, by July of 1990, more deadlocked juries. And soon afterwards, the prosecutor said Bucky would not be tried again. So they went through the process is the punishment, they say. These people, 1983 he's charged. Wasn't acquitted till 1990. That 7 years just wiped out millions of dollars. This was a hugely expensive trial for all concerned.
Can you imagine?
Destroyed the families, did all kinds of stuff, right?
The reputational damage alone would be enormous.
So 1987, right? That's when the trial began. Okay, here's what we need to note.
All right.
In 1985... Judy Johnson had an extraordinary psychotic episode, was hospitalized. The following account taken from the police report, and it was this long report I stripped out, her father and brother called police. She's in great need of hospital commitment. She had a gun. There was all this stuff happening. They had to trick her out of the house. Anyway, off she goes. And she was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic after a 12-day psychiatric examination. And then she died of alcohol poisoning in 1986. So in 1985, they know that she's a paranoid schizophrenic. And paranoid schizophrenics often do things like come up with fantastical stories.
Wow.
Like flying coffins, all kinds of stuff. So they knew that, right? Okay. So that's 1985. Remember, he's charged in 1983.
Yeah.
The trial starts in 1987. So get this. I didn't put it in there. I forgot to put it. The defense was never informed of this diagnosis.
What? Really?
Yeah.
How is that possible? That's insane.
They were never informed of that particular fact. It was not, you know, that would have really not helped the case. That would have been really bad for the case if this information came out.
That is wild.
Yeah.
That is really wild.
Yeah. So at any rate, okay. So carrying on, we see here that in the New York Times, this is just in 2021. This is ironic because in this case, the New York Times is like, oh, look what happens when dangerous conspiracy theories get started, when people go into mass panic. Oh, by the way, we should really all support gender surgery for children. So the New York Times just
that you're bringing this together.
They just can't keep a story like line going because authoritarians, it's not how they roll. It's not about the logic. It's not about groundedness. It's about you have to fit into their authoritarian model, the rest be damned. But they said here, in the early 1980s, baseless conspiracy theories about cults committing mass child abuse, they're not wrong. Mm-hmm. It was kind of baseless, but why they called them conspiracy theories, that's New York Times code speak for anything we don't agree with is Hitler or a conspiracy theory, right? That's just how they roll. It's really not thoughtful. It's really hard to have respect for that. Okay. I'll just kind as I can be. They talk about talk shows and news programs fanning the fears. Authorities investigated hundreds of allegations. The phenomenon was so sprawling that in its aftermath, it took on several names, and the Satanic Panic was the one that kind of stuck. And so New York Times goes on to talk about all these cases that happened down here, right? Now, this is to just start bringing it around that this means that this was, okay, so this Satanic Panic, this is a thing that happened. Mm-hmm. And instead of going, oh, this was due to baseless conspiracy theories, we might step back to the story and go, oh, this is something people seem to do from time to time.
Right.
They get a collective delusion in their head. It's not right. And they really run with it. Mm-hmm. And they don't care if they end up burning witches. They don't care if they end up destroying lives.
Or if they dance themselves to death, for example.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah, well, that's it.
The dancing plague. Oh.
Oh. What do you think about
I love this one. This one's funny.
Well, this is just the dancing plague of 1518. It turns out there's like 30 you can choose from. Here's one. It's the famous one. Right? The dancing plague of 1518 was a case of dancing mania occurred in Strasbourg, Alsace, modern-day France, in the Holy Roman Empire from July to September of 1518. Somewhere between 50 and 400 people took to dancing for weeks. And the outbreak began when a woman by the name of Frau Trofea, I love that we know who it is.
Who started it?
It's Frau. It was a good woman named Frau. So, right? Mm-hmm. She began to dance fervently in the street in Strasbourg, and Trofea kept up this constant dancing for a week straight. And soon 36 others joined in on the dancing chaos. Mm-hmm. Remember that video of the dancing man and the leadership, right?
Yeah.
If you just start dancing, eventually people will...
They will join you.
Will join you, right? You just need that first wild, crazy person. You don't know what we're talking about. Look up dancing man leadership. It's the best 3 minutes on leadership you can find on the internet.
So good.
Soon 36 others. And in August of the same year, the dancing plague had claimed 400 victims. Dancers were beginning to collapse. It said some even died due to stroke or heart attack. No one knew what was causing this reaction, which meant no one understood how to remedy the situation. By early September, it subsided and went away, not unlike the Satanic Panic and not unlike this whole crazy gender dysphoria thing that we're living through right now.
Yep.
We have to name it for what it is.
We do.
It is an episode we're going to look back on and go, what the F were we even thinking about? I know. There's going to be a lot of guilt. And a lot of recriminations, and we're not going to be able to understand why it began, and it's going to go away again someday. But it has all the hallmarks of this other stuff we're talking about.
I think you're right. And if Matthias Desmet was around back in the day for the dancing plagues, he would have said the same thing, I think. I wonder what he thinks about that right now.
Goofy, right? It's died suddenly before it was cool.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Nice. I think this is all we can really be sure of is that humans are prone to some form of collective psychosis. And we can see it in the Salem witch trials.
Right.
We can see it in what happened with the COVID hysteria. Mm-hmm. We can see it what happened around the holy shot mania. We can see it what's still going on with those really awful, gross, disgusting, no good cases of people who can't get transplants because they are unjabbed in both Canada and Australia, right? It's this.
Yep.
I agree. It's the same thing. It's some sort of a collective psychosis, but that means that, you know, We don't have to like try and make peace with it. We don't have to understand it. We don't have to wrestle with it. We can just go, well, that's that collective psychosis thing. And by the way, it's ungrounded. It's harmful, more harmful than not, right? I would submit to you that dancing for weeks on end is probably not the best thing for you in your arc of the life, unless you got a few pounds to lose and you got the time to spare and you don't need to be working, right?
Right.
That's how I would see that.
So, I mean, it's not based on reality, right? It's just something ridiculous that no matter how much data you bring to it, it's not going to sort of pop that bubble for people, mm-hmm. that fantasy they're living in, right? Because right. during the witch trial stuff, I remember reading about how, like, the Salem witches and whatnot, like, they would do all sorts of things to try and prove whether or not they were or weren't a witch. You know, if we throw her in water and she floats or she sinks or, you know, all these bizarre things they would do.
Oh, she's a witch.
But I don't think it actually did anything to pop people out of that. Mm. I don't know what broke it in the end. Do you remember?
No, it's, there was this,
it just have to subside.
There was this. So here's another case. So, during the French Revolution, right, they had a lot of pent up social anxiety, right? The rich that were fairly, it was the same thing we have today, a gap between the rich and the poor. Mm-hmm. The wealthy elites were a little out of touch. The whole let them eat cake kind of a moment happens, yep. and it erupts, right? And the French have a long history of violently erupting. This is just one example. But in the French Revolution, towards the tail end of 1789, I believe, you know, the heads were rolling on the guillotines and all this and that. And there was a group that arose within this, the Jacobins. Mm-hmm. The Jacobins.
The Jacobites.
Yep. And right. they were particularly under the spell of this collective psychosis. So there was an event that began in November of that year. There were these drownings at the bridge at Nantes, in Nantes, France. So they had a bridge. And they brought all these people, because at first they were just chopping off and rolling the heads of all the super wealthy elites, right? It's kind of like Pol Pot began with, like, mm-hmm. you know, the super wealthy. But before it was over, he was like, you have eyeglasses, you must be smart. So we're getting rid of you, and you know,
preemptively.
Yeah, anybody within on the intelligence spectrum.
Oh my gosh,
was taken out, right? So they kind of ran out of victims. So next thing you knew, they had decided that the they were going to blame the church. The church clearly had a hand in this. So they were bringing priests and nuns down, and they would have them undergo what they called the bridge, the marriage at the bridge, where they would strip them naked, tie them together, which would be a mortal sin under, you know, nuns and priests. And then tie them feet together and put them under the water so they were only 2 inches from the surface, right? So they would be looking up to heaven for salvation. This was the marriage.
Oh, this is awful.
The marriage at the bridge. And by the end of this thing, they're just rounding up anybody. By February, they had drowned over 4,000 people, right? Chaining them together, throwing them off of boats, hauling them back out so they could reuse the chains, right? You know, on and on. 4,000.
Wow.
Just anybody who sort of remotely looked vaguely blamable. And then it just went away. It just stopped. And nobody wanted to talk about it anymore. It was a McMartin preschool case. Like, everybody tried to go back to their lives. I think they held one dude responsible, you know, for that whole thing.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is I wonder if in the future anybody's going to be held accountable for, like, what's being done to children in the name of this whole transgender situation, right? I mean, it's just awful, honestly, and it's not scientific on so many levels. And I wonder if once it does eventually go away, if people are just going to not be able to even look at it for fear of, I don't know, they're looking at their own shadow or just not being able to handle accountability.
Well, this is why I want to talk about it, because I feel like if you just let these things sort of slip off and you don't learn the lesson, and the lesson is maybe even we can't learn from it enough to stop it again. But mm-hmm. we can learn that it's a thing. Mm-hmm. It's like when you try and repress or avoid or ignore something that's just part of the human, it's like how we're built, right? Cats don't do this, mm-hmm. right? Cats don't have a moment where they get together and decide to just destroy all the other cats and give them marriage at the bridge, right? You know?
Oh, that's so horrifying.
They don't do that.
No,
right?
They don't.
So this is a human thing, right? You know, we could see that groups of chimpanzees will collectively hunt other primates and kill them. So that's a little bit of, we share a little of that side of things with the chimps, but they don't decide to find more grotesque ways of, like, doing that, right? That's right. Kind of a human thing. But this collective psychosis, this, right? This is clearly a human thing. And we have it, we dance, we accuse people of being witches, we make up fantastical stories. Mm-hmm. It's a thing.
It is. And it seems like it's an expression of pain or anxiety of the human psyche too, you know?
Yeah.
Like externalizing that, the right. struggle of the human soul into some kind of palpable, distinct other that you can blame yep. stuff on.
Yep. So yes, Jose Mater Silva, yeah, cat cults. If we ever get the cat cults going, we're going to have to get worried about that. It's a very bad thing if that happens.
Lock your doors.
The cats are organizing, says Rockstar. If they are, we're in deep trouble. All my cats can figure out how to do is get me up at 3 a.m. because they need something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's their moment. That's the witching hour for the cats. All right. Okay. So let's carry on. So let's talk about this. So this is an example, just a comment. I left it at Peak Prosperity. This is over, I think this is in our forum area. So this is for subscribers. So I'm just going to pull this out. These are the kinds of conversations we're having. So we were discussing California and the crazy stuff that California was up to, right? And this includes things like not prosecuting shoplifters anymore. No, that wasn't it. It was that, they were going to pass a law that store employees weren't allowed to stop shoplifters. So, how's that going to work out, right? So to the leftists in California, like not able to reason cause and effect. What's the worst that could happen if we ask children leading questions, right? That's the equivalent in legal terms, right? So, we're discussing all the crazy stuff California's up to, but this just came up and popped across my screen yesterday was this thing, which was that California has a bill that they're considering, which would charge parents who don't affirm transgenderism with child abuse. So if you're in a custody case right now, that means that, and you know, you've been through that particular court thing where you involve courts in family matters, it's already a bad mix.
Yep.
When you have legislators trying to then take their infinite wisdom and tell the courts how they have to administer that family matter, this is like third level of Dante's Inferno kind of awfulness.
It's so crazy.
This is the way I look at it.
Yeah.
All right. So from this is from the green down below, this is from an article. So I didn't write this part. And it reads, quote, an updated bill in California has introduced the inclusion of affirming a child's sexual transition as a requirement for parental responsibility and child welfare. This means that failing to affirm transgenderism for a child would be considered abusive, according to the proposed California State Family Code.
Oh my gosh. That's awful. That's just, no, I'm sorry. I think that's wrong.
I'll crisp that up. It is wrong.
It is wrong. Thank you. That is just wrong. This is going to end badly
No, this is wrong, but that there even is a California State Family Code. State Family Code. That's a phrase that should not exist.
No.
As far as I'm concerned, State Family Code.
We're going to mandate it.
It goes by the name AB957, successfully passed California State Assembly on May 3rd. So it made it through that and subsequently underwent amendments by a co-sponsor in California State Senate on June 6th. The proposed amendment to Section 3011 of the Family Code outlines several factors that the courts must consider when determining best interests of the child in custody proceedings.
Oh my gosh.
This addition suggests that a parent's support and affirmation of their child's self-identified gender would become a crucial factor in evaluating the child's well-being in custody cases, and it proposes two changes to existing law. First, it states that if one parent objects to a name or gender marker change to affirm a minor's gender identity, the court should strongly consider that affirming the minor's gender identity is in the child's best interest.
This is upsetting to me. I don't know why. It's really bothering me. It makes me want to cry.
From your background, I can understand that, right? Which you've shared with people before.
Yeah.
Right?
I just can't imagine that parents are going to be in this position to like either lose their child or go along with some awful interventions or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to square that circle.
But consider it. The court has to side that with the idea that it is in the child's best interest. It's in the child's best interest to affirm whatever they're up to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have any language in here. Maybe they get, is it a 3-year-old? Is it a 5-year-old? Right? Like I've said before, if I could have had my way, in the California system when I was five, I would have a prehensile tail right now. I wanted to be a monkey. I totally, I'm not kidding. If really? You had given me the opportunity to surgically have a prehensile tail, even if it was one of those like non-functioning ones.
Yep, yep. I wanted wings.
You wanted wings.
I wanted wings.
You would have had wings. Yeah. No, that's, at any rate, that's true. So second, in child's custody proceedings, a court would be required to consider a parent's affirmation of their child's gender identity when determining the best interest of the child. Oh, these are struggle sessions, right? You have to, if you don't say the Holy Catechism mm-hmm. in the right order, if you do not bend the knee and renounce your position before the court, you're going to get strung up as a parent.
Yep.
Right? That's what this is. This is about you have to conform to the ideology. And the ideology is it's always in the best interest of the child. Always in the best interest of the child for them to have this gender identity thing. Now, I will admit this is probably true in a very small number of cases compared to the existing number of cases, which I now submit to you are in the midst of a satanic panic, dancing mania,
exactly.
witch trial, Bridget Nante sort of a moment
That's
in
right.
time.
Yep.
And that when we look back and go through this, we're going to discover, oh, it was not the right thing to do.
Mm-mm.
But they're going to enshrine it in California law. It's going to take forever to undo this, by the way. So,
I just wanted to add, the teachers that are, you know, bringing this into the classroom and introducing it, it's now becoming like part of a child's social curriculum, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like, I don't know, it's just they're creating an issue and then they're resolving it the way they want to. It's just...
Oh, so they're like the Federal Reserve, you're saying?
Pretty much, yeah.
Start the fire, then charge people for putting it out.
That's right.
It's a way time-honored way of doing business. Okay, so carrying on. So I want to probe this idea that it is always in the best interest of the child to side with the minor's gender identity claims.
Okay.
Always. Okay.
Okay. Because are you going to show me creepy pictures? Then?
No, I can't. I would never subject anybody to that because that they're awful. Don't. Nightmares over some of those pictures. So, but it's this.
Okay, good.
You know, as I wrote, and this is continuing my comment that I read it, I wrote, quote, yes, because as we all know, affirming gender identity is always in the best interest of the child. Sark. If you aren't all in on your child's gender identity decision, then you're the one with the issues, right? Never mind the number of detransitioning horror stories that are out there. You can run across them. These people who are now in their early 20s wishing that they hadn't taken 10 years of testosterone if they were women, who tried to become men, who now regret that, or vice versa, right? These are permanent life-altering changes that happen when you take hormones at a certain time. And never mind the increased rates of suicide among the transitioners. Certainly never mind this. Look, here's paper. Mental health diagnoses among transgender patients in the clinical setting, an all-payer electronic health record study. And so they went through all this stuff and they looked at 10,270 transgender patients and they identified 58% of them had at least one psychiatric diagnosis compared with just 13%, 0.6% of the control population, p-value 0.0005, right? That's very unusual. Except if this was just a normal thing, normal kids, some of these normal kids have this gender dysphoria, fine, there would be no difference, but there's an enormous 58%. Have at least one psychiatric condition. And the most prevalent diagnoses were major depressive disorder, which is a mind bender, of course, and generalized anxiety disorder being the most common diagnoses. Okay.
Wow.
So you, as a parent, you could come in and you could say, I actually, you know, by affirming this, my child, I believe, we're skirting around the fact that they have major depressive disorder and or generalized anxiety or maybe some other issues. Or bipolar mm-hmm. is also very strongly in here. There's things that need treatment.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And deserve treatment. But you as a parent might come in and go, I don't really want to pretend that this is the answer. I want them to get this underlying treatment. And the court would go, that's abuse. You're all done. And by the way, another study I forgot to pull up, but it showed that more than half of parents who have children with gender dysphoria are themselves with major issues like bipolar and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Munchausen.
Yep. Or as it's been said waggishly, transhausen by proxy.
Sorry, it's not funny, but it is.
Got it. Well,
gallows humor.
Gallows humor. But I mean, consider this. That this is just the data, and California legislators are going to ram this into the system such that it's no longer possible to bring this up without being labeled a child abuser. The courts have to say, overlook this and go, it is always in the child's best interest to go along with whatever their gender dysphoria issues are at the time. And also looking past the idea that maybe this is just a collective psychosis moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we ought to like back up and say, how about we don't necessarily tie these people and push them in the water right now? Let's just think this through, right? Because I guarantee this is how it's going to work. Guaranteed.
Well, there are lots of stages that kids go through.
Of course.
And there are tons of them. I mean, I remember from when I was growing up, it was like the grunge era, right? And people were wearing makeup and getting piercings and probably tattoos and things that their parents were not so happy about. But thankfully, none of it was so permanent that it was irreversible.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about permanent changes to the human body that are enormous, and not just to the people that choose to have this done either, but the kids that are watching this go on.
Oh yeah,
are affected. I have a poem I was going to read that was written by a 14-year-old girl who's just like, her idea of a woman is being, you know, as a woman, she's being challenged to talk about what that means for her.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, this is... I am 100% in full, I have no question about this. A lot of this, when we look back on it, there is real abuse being committed here.
Yeah.
But it's by the doctors performing the surgery. It's by the system of people who failed in their duty as caretakers and givers. It is in the systems of the schools and relative and associated boards and policies that are walling off and isolating these kids, you know, and pushing them off into these places where they set up a standard, like you say. Like I remember, you remember what it's like being that age? You want to be special, hormones hit, you don't know what the F is going on anymore. Things are a little topsy-turvy. And if somebody's coming in saying, hey, Evie, you know what the answer is? Just like all your other friends over here, start taking testosterone. Mm-hmm. That's the answer. You'll be special. By the way, you'll be part of this disadvantaged minority now, right, over here. So we'll relieve you of all that white guilt stuff we're laying on you right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you get a pass on that. There's a lot of pressures that it's the adults in charge.
Yeah.
That I consider to be 100% at fault,
mm-hmm,
responsible, derelict, and morally have abandoned, mm-hmm, their posts, as it were.
I agree.
That's...
Yeah, it's on all of us, really, on some level.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lack of integrity and morals in our culture.
Yep. So it is. It's SDRC 92126 says it's a religious/cult movement. It is. It has all the hallmarks of a cult, right? Meaning, there's an orthodoxy. You're not allowed to question it. You have to just follow along. You know, anybody who does question it, you get immediately slandered, attacked, excommunicated. Like it's violent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I see right now. I see a lot of that going on. So.
Wow.
Yeah. And Erg says, yep, the white guilt thing is so true. And it is. It's that's how this game is actually played and preyed, P-R-E-Y-D, preyed upon in this story, is because of telling people that they're guilty, 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 particularly at a young, vulnerable age, that by the very nature of being alive, that's it. Because it's like the original sin, but you can't get rid of this one because it's the color of your skin. Had nothing to do with you, per se. But there's a way. There's an absolution. There's a path to redemption in this story. But it involves you doing some creepy things with these grown-ups.
Yikes.
Over here. However you look at that. So, all right. In the time we have left, we're going to switch gears. I do believe it's somewhat related, but it's part of and parcel of what I think we have to talk about as a culture right now, which is what's going on with the with this, which is the Trump indictments. So I haven't read the whole Trump indictment. I'm positive that he did some things in there. The parts I have read, that he did some things that he shouldn't have done. Laws were probably broken. He probably... True. Also true is this, the way Glenn Greenwald put this, which is that Leon Panetta leaked classified documents to Zero Dark 30 producers so they could make that hot little film showing how amazing we were getting Osama bin Laden. And it was a pro-Obama movie. And then Obama's CIA director, David Petraeus, gave the most sensitive docs in the United States government names of covert agents to his mistress so that she could write a book. And Hillary and Biden had them strewn over their house. So this has happened before, right? So we know this. So again, it speaks to this idea that it's not that I want to say that Trump is in the clear, because he may not be, but there's a lot of people not in the clear. And mm-hmm. So what matters most in this story is that for law, it's both the appearance and the reality of impartiality. You have to have that, mm-hmm. right? And so then this guy, Mr. Agent Smith here, Mr. Smith, who's Jack Smith, who's in charge of prosecuting this whole thing and laying down the charges, he said here, quote, "We have one set of laws in this country and they apply to everyone." I wrote, just not equally. That's how I see it, you know?
Indeed.
So it's very clear that we have two sets of laws here and you know, or one set, but they just aren't applied, or they're applied capriciously, or really by a group of people who are looking increasingly like mob enforcers. And mm-hmm. the mob doesn't always have to play by rules. So
that's true.
Just how I see this, it's pretty shocking. So this is Banana Republic time. And said another way, what just happened is a sitting president just had a presidential contender arrested, which is normally stuff you hear from South America, Africa, you know, but never in the United States. And so it happened. Right. Yeah. But this has been going on a long time. And we found out from the Durham report. The Durham report showed us that the whole Russiagate thing was a complete fiction and the laws were broken. Where's the FBI arresting itself for all the laws that were broken, for opening up a case that never should have been opened up in the first place? Lying on FISA reports. I mean, it's just we see law after law after law broken. So the appearance, if not the reality of law, like if you're in a town and you see like the police chief is constantly smoking weed, but arresting you for smoking weed, like eventually you lose a little respect for the police chief.
Yeah, you would.
You know, just mm-hmm. how it goes down. Eventually you go, hey, wait, because humans have to be fair. Okay. We need fairness. And,
oh yeah.
and so let's talk about that fairness real quick. Can we? Cause this is fun. So Evie, you pulled this one up.
I did. Cause this guy, Richie Zek, was, you mentioned something about cucumbers and grapes.
Oh, in our last
live
cast?
During our last live cast. And so he was saying, I'm on the edge of my seat. What is that?
Okay. All right. Let's do it. Let's do cucumbers and grapes, shall we?
Yeah.
Because I love cucumbers and grapes. This is important framing. Like if you get this, you'll understand a lot about humans. Remember I said that primates, you know, we share a lot with our primate cousins. Mm-hmm. Maybe not everything, but we do share a lot. This is something that comes to us from our primate friends that we share a lot with. And I think it explains a lot about humans. Okay. So let's just do this. Okay. So
final experiment that I want to mention to you is our fairness study. And so this became a very famous study, and there's now many more, because after we did this about 10 years ago, it became very well known. And we did that originally with capuchin monkeys, and I'm going to show you the first experiment that we did. It has now been done with dogs, and with birds, and with chimpanzees. But with Sarah Brosnan, we started out with capuchin monkeys. So what we did is we put two capuchin monkeys side by side. Again, these animals, they live in a group. They know each other. We take them out of the group, put them in a test chamber. And there's a very simple task that they need to do. And if you give both of them cucumber for the task, the two monkeys side by side, they're perfectly willing to do this 25 times in a row. So cucumber, even though it's really only water in my opinion, but cucumber is perfectly fine for them. Now if you give the partner grapes, the food preferences of my capuchin monkeys correspond exactly with the prices in the supermarket. And so if you give them grapes, it's a far better food, then you create inequity between them. So that's the experiment we did. Recently, we videotaped it with new monkeys who had never done the task, thinking that maybe they would have a stronger reaction, and that turned out to be right. The one on the left is the monkey who gets cucumber. The one on the right is the one who gets grapes. The one who gets cucumber, note that the first piece of cucumber is perfectly fine. The first piece she eats. Then she sees the other one getting grape, and you will see what happens. So she gives a rock to us. That's the task. And we give her a piece of cucumber, and she eats it. The other one needs to give a rock to us. And that's what she does. And she gets a grape. And she eats it. The other one sees that. She gives a rock to us now, gets again cucumber.
<It's laughing. laughs>
She tests the rock now against the wall. She needs to give it to us. And she gets cucumber again. So this is basically the Wall Street protest that you see here.
All right, so that's cucumbers and grapes. I love that. I love that because it does describe the human experience altogether, right? And so that's why, you know, when Plutarch said the oldest and most fatal ailment of all republics is a gap between the rich and the poor, that was actually a really insightful thing. And that's what we're seeing in the capuchin monkeys, that in fact, as a social creature wired up as we are through evolution, it says that we need this fairness to exist, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem is that we don't have this fairness, and that's what we're seeing in the Trump indictment. So what's really happening here is a whole group of people are watching cucumbers and grapes being handed out. And that makes us shake the cages, right? This leads to that anger. Like, they're playing with fire with this thing.
Oh, yeah. Anger, like, or apathy.
Fire.
Either one.
Well, you break the social contract. That's what's actually happening in these stories. They're breaking it. They're saying, oh, you know, these people over here, we're giving them grapes, but you people get cucumbers. So that's the grapes and cucumbers bit right there. And I think it explains a lot.
You know what? I think you're right. I think that does too.
That's why we have to have the appearance, if not the reality, of fairness. It's really important. Or you have a broken down society. When you have a broken down society, a lot less is possible. Trust is important. You need to have trust in your money system. You need to have trust with each other, trust within and across the system. There has to be not perfect fairness, but close enough, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You could have slightly better cucumbers than me, you know, and we're both getting cucumbers, is okay. Or you get slightly better grapes than me, we're both having grapes. That's okay. But grapes and cucumbers don't cut it. Right? As for this, just don't work.
No, it's interesting. I think up until this point, it seems like, I mean, I don't want to generalize necessarily, and I shouldn't, but it seems like the United States, for whatever...
Rockstar got me again. The cucumbers of wrath. Remember the grapes of wrath, the Steinbeck novel? The cucumbers of wrath. All right, good one.
What was I saying? Anyway.
I forget.
It feels like the United States has, at least in appearance, seemed like it was fair.
Yeah, good point.
Up to now, right? So the last 400 years or whatever, it's been a long time that we've actually been practicing these concepts of democracy, right? And the checks and balances within our government systems. And it hasn't been perfect for sure, but it seems like it has worked to a certain degree. And it seems like we're watching the breakdown of that.
Yeah.
In our lifetime, which is just wild.
Yep. So... grapes and cucumbers. You'll hear us refer to it from time to time. So now we all share that. Glad we can share that moment because it's really important. But I see the grape thing happening all the time versus cucumbers in our society. All right, how about this one, Evie? Why'd you pull this one up?
I just feel like it's good to get voices out, whether we're in agreement with them or not. And I wanted to see what you would say. I love putting Chris on the spot.
Good.
See if I can stump you. Noisy Dan, 6 days ago, he said, your content often seems very partisan to me. You also seem a bit too conspiracy minded to be healthy. I guess it's a matter of perspective. While I seem to disagree with you on many political matters, there's enough crossover of interest on the poly crisis. I still value your content. You do some good work on this. I hope we can build connections on our common ground, even when there may be differences of opinion on other matters. It is good to disagree with kindness rather than animosity. Big love. And that's what I loved about it, is that here we are sort of exercising our right to disagree with each other. And that's a huge part of communication, good communication, right?
So I will agree with Noisy Dan that I've become so quote unquote partisan, but not because I've moved anywhere. I'm just the same guy I've always been. I like data, logic, reason, common sense. I like changing my mind when the facts change, but I'll take exception with Noisy Dan, a bit too conspiracy minded. That, unfortunately, Noisy Dan, I consider that to be weak thinking. Anybody who throws out the term, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, as if it's some sort of like show stopping, you know, we're all in agreement that conspiracy theorists are just,
you know, do your own reading.
You do your own reading, man. Like, are just people who can be ignored because they're obviously all nuts. It's like, well, hold on. Let's have a rational, reasonable conversation about that. So what's a conspiracy theory? We have to take them one by one. If you said, oh, flat earthers, I'd be like, oh, no, totally. I can't find any data to support that. I got nothing. I can look at that and say, yep, there's not a shred to support that. But if you want to talk about material science and 9/11, boy, I got some data for you. If you want to talk about, the fact that there seems to be a complete imbalance between who's getting charged with what, I got a lot of data around that. So if we want to have a database conversation, that's fine. But again, this is the year where virtually almost all of my so-called conspiracy theories have come true, right? About elections, about election interference, about the shots, about the fact that there were PSYOP nudge units trying to control and push us into certain preordained positions around all things COVID, that there was indeed a large conspiracy afoot to silence people, shadow ban, who dared to talk about Dwizabin 1, Dwizabin 2, a couple of compounds here, if you're longtime followers that relate to certain very safe medicines that I can't talk about because they're still banned, you know, for reasons that are totally unclear, right? These all happened. Mm-hmm. Maybe you weren't Noisy Dan wasn't meaning to leave a huge long comment, but if we want to talk about that, maybe we should have a show about that sometime, which is when we say that, instead of just like taking that baby in bathwater, oh, conspiracy theorist. It's like, hang on, which ones are we talking about?
Yeah.
Because if you have specific ones, you say, you know, you're a bit too conspiracy minded, Chris, because this, and this, right?
Bring some data.
Which things? Because I'm happy to talk about all of them, but just be prepared. I have the receipts. I always come prepared. I love my science. I like things to make sense.
Just send the comments to me, and then I won't let him read them, and then I'll just pop them on the show. That could be kind of fun.
All right. What about this one, Evie?
I just appreciated what Dolly Martin said. No one can change the system from the top down. Anyone inside an organization must be at the top to change policy, and squeaky wheels lose their jobs or get kneecapped. That's why joining these corrupt systems can never work. We need a bottoms-up movement, or like we've talked about before in the show, like a parallel structures program.
Well, I agree. I think we need a movement. It is a movement. It has to be a movement. It's no longer left-right.
Mm-mm. And it can't be stagnant. Left, it has right, to be moving.
Left, right have wrapped all the way around. I mean, you know, this idea that Noisy Dan said that, oh, you're partisan. Like, actually, a pox on both their houses. We have a uniparty. There's a couple of people, but I'm on each side of the aisle, there's just a few that I go, oh, okay, these are reasonable people. But by and large, overwhelming majority, it's a uniparty. They believe in the same things. They believe in endless debt printing, endless wars, endless new chemicals sort of dumped on us, endless new regulations to get laid upon the taxpayers, endless more bennies and cuts and insider stock tips for congressmen and their friends. You know, that's the system we have. So to Dolly's point here, we do need a movement, right? But it's not left right anymore. Mm-mm. It's got to be up down, you know, find the people who are on the integrity axis.
We got to join together, too. I want you to start. I'm excited about you getting back on other people's shows and having others on yours, because I know, you know, doing the website and all these other things have taken a big priority. But I also am excited for all of the like-minded individuals to get together.
Mm-hmm. It's time.
Yeah.
No, it's really time. And I know you and I are busy doing what we're doing here in Western Massachusetts. And, you know, we've got land, and we know that we need more community here, and we'll be talking about this more and more over time as we get things sort of gel, but things are gelling. My position, for what it's worth, is that it's past time. There's something really enormous coming. I can feel it. I mean, can you feel it?
Mm-hmm.
We get this all the time from people who we know who are like, dude, something's coming, right? Like, what is it? You know, because I live by the anecdote, die by the anecdote. Yep. And I want to know what people are thinking. But in my personal anecdote set now, a lot of people who are formerly very mainstream centrist mm-hmm. are doing things like buying country properties and buying gold and putting food away and other things that are, you would sort of correlate with having a spidey sense vibe that maybe something is coming.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing more and more of that.
Yep. And by the look of it, I mean, when you and I read the tea leaves, I think we're looking at world events. We're looking at what's going on in this country in terms of the way the leaders are taking, you know, the paths the leaders are choosing to take us down, et cetera, regarding our government debt and blah, blah, blah. Like, we're trying to make our most informed decisions, and we're really just trying to live a life of prosperity and abundance and not worrying about all this at every moment and making sure that those we love are also within the arms of that abundance, you know,
mm-hmm.
those we care about, and doesn't necessarily have to always be our family either, our blood relatives, but.
Yep.
But.
Well, good. So.
It's going to be an interesting time for sure.
Yeah. And one last. Let's see if I think I may have to.
All right. Well, you fix that. By the way, mm-hmm. anybody that's listening, give this show a thumbs up if you enjoyed it, and pass it on to others. Help us get breakthrough the algorithm and its its tendency not to always serve up Chris's content. I think we're battling some shadow banning on a regular basis, and that's hard. But if it was helpful to you, please share it
mm-hmm.
and give it a thumbs up and subscribe or resubscribe as needed.
Yes, please. Hit the like, hit subscribe, share, all of that. And it's really important because we see more and more of this where when we were talking about the child stuff that's happening and gender dysphoria and all of that and the reaction of the, you know, shots and not giving people transplants, all that. Anyway, Defender and Z said it's really interesting. The same thing's happening in countries around the world, speaking from New Zealand. After the Posey Parker rally and subsequent fallout, Posey Parker is a women's rights activist who wants to talk about actual women's rights and the right of women to actually be women, and she gets attacked by trans rights and LGBTQC+, whatever the whole thing is, activists, right? So just even standing up, a woman standing up for women to allowed to be women is too much of a threat, because of course that's what happens when narcissists, you set a boundary with them, they attack you. That was what we were talking about, I think, last time. It was mm-hmm. that whole dynamic of, just simply saying, please, no, I don't want you attacking me, mm-hmm. is an attack, mm-hmm. you know, for people.
It's considered
certain ways. All right, so.
Not okay.
With that, Evie, we're coming into the end. You said you had a poem.
I do.
All right,
moment while I pull that up.
While you're pulling that up, I'm going to remind everybody that I'm doing a big series. I'm redoing what's called the Crash Course on, it's all for free. It's the best work I've ever done in my life, and I'm updating it all, doing it kind of long form now. So chapters 1-5 are up on the Peak Prosperity channel, and we covered, to begin with, all things related to the economy. So this would be how money is created, banking, the Fed, debt, inflation, things like that. And then we're coming into energy soon, and these are really important chapters. So if you want to know why the world is the way it is, and more importantly, where it's going, the Crash Course is my best effort to frame it so that you can see the world that way. And I'm not asking that you believe me. In fact, challenge it. I love the challenges. Thanks to Evie for bringing up the challenging comment. I love challenges. I want to know how I'm wrong. In fact, I'd love to be wrong. I don't think I am. But if you could see it, it'll either change you or you can challenge it. But the Crash Course is really important work. It's the best I have to offer. So. With that, Evie, what do you got?
All right. I'm just going to leave folks with this. Hold on. I need to credit. I don't know where I put it. you know who you are that suggested this poem. I don't have the screenshot because it wasn't fitting on the page, but somebody suggested this poem, Desiderata, by Max Ehrman, and I appreciate it. And if anyone else has poetry suggestions, please leave them in the comments. I'm happy to check them out.
Desiderata. Interesting.
Desiderata. He says, and I guess he wrote this in like the 20s, I want to say. Go placidly amid the noise and the haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even to the dull and ignorant. They too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexatious to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain or bitter, for always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself, especially. Do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love, for in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is as perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune, but do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and loneliness. Beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be, and whatever your labors and aspirations, in the noisy confusion of life, keep peace in your soul. With all its sham, drudgery, and broken dreams, it is still a beautiful world. Be cheerful, strive to be happy. That's by Max Ehrman, Ehrmann.
Thank you for that. And
thank you to the person who suggested that.
Well done. Well done. Well, thank you everybody for being here today. It's been a real pleasure. And I would remind everybody that this is, I noted a comment here, one last piece. Somebody said, wow, these are the most, you have the, it's Zachary Pettigrew said, Chris has the most polite and kind audience. What a wonderful show. We do, Evie and I and the whole Peak Prosperity team want to just invite everybody here to come to Peak Prosperity. We are an incredible tribe, group of people. We are the remnant. And the reason we do these shows, the reason we create things like the Crash Course, put all this content out, is to find all y'all, you know, and to come together, because we're going to need each other in this next period of time. Might be wrong about that, but I'm not confused. So if you feel like you need your tribe, you want to be around people where you go, wow, this is nourishing and engaging, not depleting and vexatious, then Peak Prosperity is a place you would come to check or come see this live cast again. But thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for participating. Loved all of your comments, even the ones we couldn't get to.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing part of your day with us, and we'll see you again next week.
All right. With that, thanks, everybody, and bye-bye, and we will be with you here on this channel next week.